Good afternoon. Apologies for the delay. It's great to be back with everybody. Certainly miss seeing most of you who weren't on the road.
Most of you.
I gave myself a little wiggle room there. The president's historic five-country trip to Asia was an incredible success. He rallied the world against the menace of North Korea, strengthened our alliances, and showed our commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific region, and took a stand for fair and reciprocal trade. As a result of the trip, American families will be safer and more secure, and American workers and companies are one step closer to competing on the level playing field they deserve. Speaking of leveling the playing field for our workers and businesses, the president applauds the House for passing the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, a massive step toward fulfilling our promise to deliver historic tax cuts for the American people by the end of the year. We are encouraged that the House and Senate continue to work together to deliver what the president asked them to do: allow hardworking middle-class families to keep more of their hard-earned money and empower our companies and workers to dominate their global competition. The Senate Finance Committee is also making progress on its companion bill and will soon advance it to the floor for a vote. A simple, fair, and competitive tax code will be our rocket fuel for our economy, and it's within our reach. We'll bring back jobs, we'll bring back our wealth, and as the president has said many times, we'll bring back our great American dreams. Now is the time to deliver, and we fully expect the Senate to follow the House's suit. And with that, I'll take your questions. Cecilia.
Thank you, Sarah. Two questions, two topics, if I may. Does the president believe Roy Moore's accusers, or does he think Roy Moore should drop out of this race?
Look, the president believes that these allegations are very troubling and should be taken seriously, and he thinks that the people of Alabama should make the decision on who their next senator should be.
So that's a no, he thinks Roy Moore should stay in?
Look, the president said in his statement earlier this week that if the allegations are true, then that Roy Moore should step aside. He still firmly believes that.
Major. How would the president like to see that truth proven?
Look, I'm not going to get into and litigate back and forth, but the president's been clear that if any of these allegations are true, allegations that he takes very seriously, finds very troubling, if those do happen to be true, then he should do the right thing and step aside.
Does the president believe the accusations themselves, that is to say the women themselves and their own credibility, can be established outside of them making these allegations? What's the mechanism by which the president would be satisfied that the allegations are true?
Look, I don't think the president's laid out what the mechanisms are. That should be determined possibly by a court of law. But that's also something in a decision that the people of Alabama need to make, not the president, whether or not they want Roy Moore to support them in the Senate.
Sarah, Ivanka Trump says that she has no reason not to believe the women that come forward. Does the president disagree with her position?
Look, the president's not disagreeing with anybody. He's saying that he finds the allegations to be extremely troubling. He doesn't know any more than you do on this fact, other than that these are something that should be taken very seriously, and that the people of Alabama should be the ones to make the decision on whether or not to support Roy Moore.
Yeah. Matthew. Thank you, Sarah. Having the information that we have and the information that the people of Alabama have, would President Trump vote for Roy Moore?
The president's not a voter in Alabama, so
I know he's not, but he endorses candidates all the time and states that he's not a voter, and he says, I would vote for this person or I wouldn't. Would he vote for Roy Moore?
I haven't asked him if he would vote for Roy Moore.
Would you get back to us on that?
John?
Thank you, Sarah. A number of Republican senators have pulled their endorsement for Roy Moore. They've urged him to step aside. Senator Shelby said he wouldn't even vote for him. He writes one in on the ballot. Senator Cruz has pulled his endorsement. The president is not only president of the United States, commander-in-chief, he's also leader of the Republican Party. Why won't he weigh in on this? Why won't he take the same type of strong position that these other Republican senators have taken on Roy Moore?
Look, the president supported the decision by the RNC to withdraw resources from this race, but feels it's up to the people of Alabama to make the decision. I don't have anything further to add on that front.
Sarah.
James.
Thank you, Sarah. I don't mean by asking about this to suggest it's necessarily the most important thing facing the country right now, but it happens to be my story assignment for the day. You say that the president finds these allegations against Mr. Moore, Judge Moore, to be very troubling, extremely troubling, etc. As we all know, the president faced a number of similar allegations or somewhat similar allegations during the course of the campaign, and he vigorously denied them. But I wonder what you would assert to be the difference between the two situations, such that on the face of things, we should find one set of allegations very troubling, and on the other, we shouldn't pay attention to them at all, or we should totally disbelieve them.
Well, I think the president has certainly a lot more insight into what he personally did or didn't do, and he spoke out about that directly during the campaign, and I don't have anything further to add beyond that. Jeff.
Chair, I'd like to ask you about two other topics. The tax bill was passed by the House today. One of the things that the tax bill does is increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion. I know the White House has argued that that will be paid by growing the economy, but if the economy doesn't grow, how do you square that with the Republican view of general principle that the deficits are bad? And on a second,
right, I mean, I just disagree with the premise of the question. We do expect the economy to grow. We've seen that happen over the last 10 months, and we expect that to continue.
But are you confident that the economy will grow consistently enough to cover these costs that otherwise would lead to a ballooning deficit?
Yes, that's been part of our process and part of what we've laid out from the beginning. We expect this to be consistent, and that's certainly what we hope for. That's one of the reasons that the president continues to push for things like deregulation that have helped boost the economy. He's going to continue to push things that help do that and accomplish that, and we feel confident moving forward. Blake?
Sarah, let me ask you about the tax bill as well. On the House side, they've passed it today. The Senate side still has a ways to go. These are similar, but they are also different bills and plans. At this point, does the president have a preference for the House or the Senate bill, and if so, which one?
Right now, both bills achieve the president's priorities. That's been his focus, tax cuts for middle-class families, simplifying the tax code, slashing tax for businesses of all sizes so they can grow, create jobs, raise wages for their workers, and compete in the global marketplace. He's laid out those priorities. Right now, both of those pieces of legislation do that, and that's what he's been focused on throughout the process.
You didn't say they're repealing the Obamacare individual mandate. Is that a priority for the president as well?
That's something the president obviously would love to see happen, but in terms of the big things that he laid out on the very front end of the principles for the tax reform package, it's those things I just laid out. Mara.
Sarah, thank you very much. I have a question about the chip, but just first of all, does his endorsement of Moore still stand?
Look, as I've said, the president believes this is a decision for the people of Alabama to make, not one for him to make.
Okay. And my question about the trip is that he's made a strong argument that having a good relationship with Russia and with Vladimir Putin is a good thing for the United States. Does the president believe that Putin would ever lie to his face?
Look, as the president said many times before, he doesn't think that it's helpful for him to get into a back and forth argument with Vladimir Putin, but he does think that there are places where we can work with Russia, particularly whether it's on Syria, North Korea, or other big global issues that the world is facing. And that's been the president's focus, and he's going to continue to look for ways that we can work with them that help America. Steven.
I want to ask you another question about tax reform. 13 Republicans in the House today broke from the president, broke from their party leaders, because they believe that this bill will actually increase taxes for some, if not many or most, of their constituents in California, New Jersey, and New York. Those 13 members represent millions of people who, in theory, voted for the president believing that he would lower their taxes. So what does the president say to those people, and how is this whole tax reform endeavor for them not a bait and switch?
Look, the president's still incredibly focused. He's laid out his priorities of making sure that this tax plan helps those in the middle class, and that's exactly what it does. That's the focus of both pieces of legislation in the House and the Senate. Jim?
Roy Moore, with president campaign with Roy Moore?
Not that I'm aware of.
And can I ask you a follow-up? Do you think he's a creep?
Do I?
Yeah.
Look, I don't know Roy Moore. I haven't met him in person, so I wouldn't be able to respond to that.
Kristen. Does the president think that Roy Moore is qualified to serve in the U.S. Senate?
Look, the president, as I've said about seven or eight times now, thinks that this is a decision for the people of Alabama
Sarah,
to make.
Sarah, we've heard from you. We've heard from Ivanka on this. When are we going to hear from the president himself?
The president has put a statement out earlier in the week when we were on the trip, and he stands by that statement.
He's ignored shouted questions for two straight days. He's the president of the United States. the leader of the Republican Party. I think a lot of people want to.
I'm aware of all of those qualifications of the president, and it's actually my job to come out here and answer questions on his behalf, which I'm doing, which I've done, and which he has done repeatedly over the last 12 days while we were on a trip across Asia. So to act like he hasn't answered questions is just silly.
Senator Al Franken should step down.
What does
he
think of Senator Al Franken?
Sorry, Chris, I'm going to move around.
On the other side of the aisle, does the president have a response to the allegations against Senator Al Franken and also the mistrial over Senator Bondman?
On Senator Franken, it appears that the Senate is looking into that, which they should, and we feel that's an appropriate action. I haven't asked him about Senator Menendez.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about the decision-making behind apparently appointing Mick Mulvaney to lead the Consumer Financial Protection Board, at least on an interim basis, given the fact that he's been a longstanding critic of the board in existence in the first place, and what signal should we take from that in terms of the future of that board and direction?
I don't have any announcements on that front at this point, but we'll follow up with you in the coming days over any movement in that area. Francesca.
Thank you, Sarah. China has announced that it's sending a special envoy to North Korea tomorrow. The president was just in Beijing. Is that something that the president talked to President Xi about while he was there? Is that something that the president favors?
The president certainly favors China taking a greater role in putting maximum pressure on North Korea. This is one of the things that he and President Xi spoke extensively about over the course of our visit, and certainly any effort in order to denuclearize the peninsula there in North Korea, then China participating in that, the president certainly supports those efforts.
Another question about China and trade. Yesterday in his remarks, the president said that we can no longer tolerate unfair trading practices that steal American jobs, wealth, and intellectual property. The days of the United States being taken advantage of are over. He specifically mentioned China as he said all of those words. Does the president still believe that China is raping the U.S. economy?
Look, the president knows that there hasn't been a fair and reciprocal trade with China. He doesn't think that we've had great deals in place with China, and he's been very clear, and he was very clear directly with President Xi, which he'll continue to be, that we want to make sure that Americans and American workers in particular are getting the best deal and the best pieces possible. That was one of the reasons that he worked to secure massive deals of totaling over $250 billion while he was in China. He's going to continue to push for those types of efforts. Jordan.
Thanks, Sarah. Before the president left for Asia, officials here hinted that North Korea might be added back onto the list of state sponsors of terror. Has the president decided to go forward with that move?
I believe the president will be making an announcement and decision on that at the first part of next week. We'll keep you posted on those details. Hunter.
Thank you, Sarah. The Fish and Wildlife Service is lifting a ban and will now allow elephant trophies imported from Zambia and Zimbabwe. President Trump has previously said he disagreed with big game hunting. Why does he want this ban lifted, and has he changed his view on the practice?
Actually, there hasn't been an announcement that's been finalized on this front, but at this point, I defer you to the Department of Interior.
I did speak to them today. They said that they have a draft of what's going in the Federal Register tomorrow.
Again, there hasn't been an announcement, and until that's done, I wouldn't consider anything final.
So with this?
Again, I would defer you to the Department of Interior for the time being, and when we have an announcement on that front, we'll let you know.
Thank you, sir. The Senate Judiciary Committee today sent a letter to Jared Kushner alleging that he did not provide all the information that he should have about his emails during the campaign, including emails regarding WikiLeaks. Do you acknowledge that Mr. Kushner has not been fully forthcoming? And then secondly, Donald Trump Jr. sent out all of his correspondence with WikiLeaks on his Twitter account. Do you acknowledge that the campaign was in touch with WikiLeaks during the campaign, and was the president aware that his son was corresponding with WikiLeaks?
On the first question, Jared's attorney will be putting out a statement momentarily. If that hasn't happened yet, it'll probably happen here within the next half hour or so. So I would refer you to that. In terms of any other questions dealing with the campaign, I'd refer you to the campaign. Deborah.
Thank you, Sarah. After the House passed the GOP healthcare law, you had a celebration in the Rose Garden.
I'm assuming there's not going to be a celebration today about the tax bill. What are you doing differently this time around?
Look, the president was on the Hill earlier today to praise and rally support for the vote. He's very engaged in this process. We're going to continue to be, and we're looking forward to seeing the same results come out of the Senate when they pass a bill and signing historic tax cuts and tax reform by the end of the year. Noah?
Yes, you talked about the tax bill in terms of fulfilling the promise to middle-class people that the president made during the campaign and afterward. Why does the president support a bill, though, where the individual tax rates will, the cuts will expire at the end of 2025, but the corporate rates will never expire, going down from 35 to 20?
Look, the president laid out his principles. That's what we've said all along. We're counting on the House and Senate to actually put in the details of that legislation that reflect the priorities that the president laid out. We're going to continue letting this bill work through the process. And right now, we think it's in a really good place, and we're going to keep pushing forward for progress.
Do you think that's a fair bill to have that one provision expire and the other not?
Again, the president has made clear what his priorities for this legislation are, and we're going to continue to stay focused on this.
What is
Jessica?
The priority on that count?
One of the other things that happened in China right after the president left was that this announcement about more foreign ownership in the financial sector in China was announced, but it was announced after the president left. I wonder if that came up in the conversations between the presidents and if that was part of any ongoing conversations or deals that were reached during the visit or before the visit.
I'm not sure if that specific thing came up. I'd have to check and get back to you.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry has taken issue today with the president's statement yesterday that he and President Xi agreed that there would be no freeze for freeze proposal regarding North Korea. What is your understanding or the president's understanding of what he and she agreed about that, and does the president stand by that statement yesterday?
Yeah, both sides made their position clear. They're different, but we agree that they're going to be different positions, and therefore it's not going to move forward from this point.
Thank you, Sarah. Before the president left for his trip to Asia, he was called on the Justice Department to look into the Democrats in that situation, as he put it. And days later, the Attorney General asked special prosecutors to look into the Uranium One allegations in the Clinton Foundation. Did the president cross any lines or try to influence the Justice Department and the Attorney General to look into the situation of the Democrats?
Look, the president hasn't directed any investigation or the appointment of a special counsel. In fact, he said publicly that he hasn't been involved with that, and that's entirely up to the Department of Justice. Brian.
Thank you very much. Going back to Russia just a bit, when he said that he spoke with Putin and he believed that Putin meant what he said, in other words, there was no collusion with the government.
He actually said he believed that Putin believed what he said,
okay, so,
and that he wasn't going to get into an argument with him over that when they had bigger things like North Korea, like the issues in Syria that they needed to deal with and work together on.
Okay, so the question being, he's always maintained that it was the Democrats who colluded with Russia. Is he saying that Putin exonerated the Democrats?
Look, the president still firmly believes that there was collusion with the Democrats during this election process. But again, he's not going to get into the back and forth with a world leader that he needs to work with and wants to work with in order to deal with some of the big and serious things that are facing our country right now. Sorry, Brian, I'm going to move ahead.
Sarah, as a New Yorker, is President Trump concerned that the potential tax increases for hardworking New Yorkers who can no longer deduct state and local taxes might cause an exodus from New York, losing its spot as the U.S. and world financial capital?
Look, we've addressed this. A very minimum number of people actually itemize their deductions. But again, I've said it a few times today. I feel kind of like a broken record today. But the president is focused on the principles he laid out in making sure that we get the most tax cuts possible for the people of the middle class and for most Americans, and that's what he's been focused on.
Thank you, Sarah.
Take one last question. Eamon.
Thanks, Sarah. So Senator Johnson, Republican, has raised some questions about the fairness of the tax proposal, particularly the disparity between corporate and individuals and the way they're big corporations and regional corporations and the way they're treated as well. So the question is, what concessions is the White House prepared to make to Senator Johnson? And if you do make concessions to him, are you worried that other Republicans will demand their own concessions on issues of importance to them and you'll have just a revolving door of senators who want something from you in this bill?
I think that's something for the members of the Senate to work through, certainly not something the president is getting into the necessarily the back and forth of that conversation at this point in time. Again, he spoke with Senator Johnson. He supports the priorities. He wants to work with members of the Senate to bring them together to make sure that we pass historic tax cuts and tax reform.
Did you offer Senator Johnson anything when they spoke?
No, but he did encourage him to get on board and support the tax reform package. Thanks so much, guys. We'll be around the rest of the afternoon.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.
Mexico's foreign minister, Luis Videgaray Caso, is in Moscow, and he met and held a press conference with Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. We begin with the comments by the Russian foreign minister on some of the commonalities between Mexico and Russia in their view of what's happening in the world.
I should say that our positions are similar, very similar when it comes to international regional affairs. We have common approach to the need of relying always on the Charter of the United Nations. We are thankful to our Mexican friends for the support of a number of our initiatives, including the initiatives during the current session of the United Nations. These are the resolutions of the international cyber security, informational security, confidence-building measures in the space area, and the resolution against the glorification of Nazism. That resolution was adopted just yesterday, but the majority of votes, only two delegations decided to vote against that resolution. We agreed to reinforce our coordination in the fight against terrorism, in the armaments control, non-proliferation, and we'll continue working closely on the within the framework of the G20, APEC, and other multilateral fora. We appreciate the interest of Mexico, which they take in the development of relations between the Russian Federation and the regional structures of Latin America and the Caribbean, and I mean the CELAC, for instance, and we're also interested in having better contact between the Russian, to the Eurasian Economic Union and the Pacific Alliance, which Mexico is a member of, and I would like to thank our Mexican colleagues for very fruitful, very useful work, and I sincerely hope that we will be advancing even quicker on all the tracks of our cooperation. Thank you.
Muy buenas tardes, muchas gracias.
Good afternoon and thank you very much, Mr. Minister, Mr. Foreign Relations of the Russian Federation, Sergei Lavrov. For me, it's a privilege to be here in Moscow, to have that opportunity to have the dialogue very constructive and, well, full of respect with the Russian side, with Minister Lavrov in particular. First and foremost, I would like to say that we started our meeting with, well, thanking from the bottom of our heart on the part of the government of Mexico and the people of Mexico to the people of Russia and Russian government for the support they delivered after the terrible earthquake in September. I had the honor to meet with Mr. Lavrov on the sidelines of the United Nations session just a couple of days after the second earthquake on the 19th of September, which was simply devastating to the whole city of Mexico, and other cities of our country. That is why I'd like to say that we are deeply thankful for the help. Days after the meeting, Mr. Lavrov, we received the humanitarian aid
que llegó a Acapulco y que rápidamente fue distribuida a la zona
with 34 tons of humanitarian aid supply. It arrived at Acapulco and then it was, well, transported to other regions. That just confirms
Rusia es un amigo de Mexico,
that Russia
is algo que se queda en el corazón de los mexicanos para siempre.
Is our friend. And that is why I would like to thank deeply Mr. Lavrov, Vladimir Putin, the President of Russia, for their generosity and their help. This year, the President,
Enrique
Peña Nieto, had the opportunity to have a bilateral meeting
in Xiamen, China,
in China with President Putin, where they talked about the certain steps to be taken in cooperation, and these steps have been discussed today, Mr. Lavrov. I should say that that common ground which we reached long ago shows that we are both are interested in cooperation. We respect Russia, its history, its institutions, and its authorities. And we are certainly, have the liking towards the Russian people, nation. We have very good trade environment, investment climate. We have very good exchanges in the cultural and humanitarian and scientific and technical fields. There are opportunities for even deeper cooperation. A very important part of our work is to use this opportunity to enhance our bilateral agenda, our legal and contractual framework for our work. We've set the task to bring us up to the time on a number of matters which can enhance our cooperation across the board. It's very important to support regular contacts and regular consultative meetings as have been happening this year, that happened before. And in the upcoming months, we also will conduct a number of talks and meetings. As for investments, I should say that we are very enthusiastic about receiving investments from Russia. And many sectors of our economy, these investments are very much welcomed. I'd like to highlight that the amount of investments in the energy sector is growing. As you all know, until recently, in Mexico,
we
had quite strict legal framework, but it all changed after the reforms which were introduced into the energy sector. These reforms were initiated by President Peña Nieto, and that opens up new possibilities for investors from around the world. And we are happy to see that we have a number of Russian investors willing to seize this opportunity, which opened up because of these reforms. Also, would like to expand the presence of Russian companies, of Mexican companies on the Russian market. And I mean the manufacturing of car parts and also food products.
Supply.
Certainly, would like to increase the trade in food and food products because the Russian market is very big, and our own market is also big. We have wonderful companies producing fantastic products. We talked about the technical modalities for further increase of trade
on
that track, as it was said by Mr. Lavrov. In many areas, in many matters, our positions coincide, and it happens on the various platforms, G20, APEC, United Nations. There we have great opportunities to maintain the high level of political dialogue. That allows us to compare our notes and positions and give additional impetus to the implementation of various projects to the benefit of humanity. Moreover, so, I would like to further deepen the ties because these ties are very important, and this meeting is a very good opportunity just for that. I'd like to thank the head of the Russian Foreign Ministry and Foreign Ministry servicemen for that very warm welcome. Colleagues, we are starting our press conference. RT, please.
Добрый день. Вопрос телеканала «Рашты», вопрос господину Видогарай Касу. В последнее время в мексиканской прессе муссируются слухи о возможном вмешательстве Российской Федерации в предстоящие выборы в Мексике. Это дань моды или действительно у мексиканских властей есть некие доказательства этого будущего вмешательства? И каково ваше личное отношение к данному вопросу? И также вопрос Сергею Викторовичу, как вы могли прокомментировать данные публикации?
Наверное, я начну, поскольку обвинение в нашей
Probably I'll start, since we have been accused of that in the first place. Well, frankly speaking, I'm not familiar with these publications in the Mexican mass media, but I've been hearing a lot about such gossips being spread, and I probably know even who is behind that. In that particular case, I can only say that these accusations are totally unfounded. These are speculations without no facts or evidence to support them. Probably the goal is to bring some tensions in our relations at this very point when we have such positive growth of our trade and incremental open of our relations. And we know that here we should name the United States, who adopt unacceptable measures when it comes to the mass media, first and foremost, our T channel. That's just lamentable. We will answer, we will respond to that, but these measures will be reciprocal. It will be a tit-for-tat move, as Mr. President said, and the interference in Mexico, interference in Brexit, in France, in Sweden, even in South Africa, they say we have appointed some certain minister to govern some departments. So neither RT nor any other mass media or any other Russian structural institutions are doing any interference. They conduct no interference in the elections, in the parliamentary or presidential elections in Mexico. We have nothing to do with that. That's just the Washington syndrome. Elections, organization of the elections is a sovereign matter which has to do only with Mexico itself.
Bueno, creo que la I believe
the position of Mr. Lavrov is very clear, and my part, we have no evidence to support that theory. I'd like to say that the Mexican government has no intention to interfere in the Russian elections.
Entre las personas, entre los individuos y entre las naciones, el respeto al derecho
as for the relation between Russia and Mexico, it's
Rusia
very distinct, it's very special, because we treat each other with genuine respect. We are binded by the long-lasting ties, very important ties. We will continue to build up momentum.
Пожалуйста, принц Латина.
Canciller, ¿qué perspectivas abre el desarrollo de las relaciones comerciales y los vínculos también con Rusia a pesar de todo el contexto político que se vive en torno a las relaciones con Estados Unidos, y no solamente en Estados Unidos, sino también con el TLC, el Tratado de Libre Comercio que hay entre Canadá, México y los Estados Unidos?
Pero México está participando de una manera seria, profesional, de buena fe en la modernización
I should say that
del Tratado de Libre Comercio de América del Norte con Canadá y con los Estados Unidos. Es un proceso que está en marcha. De hecho,
Free Trade Treaty
aquí.
With the USA
hoy mismo está
and Canada,
the
so-called NAFTA.
That
process is already
insisto,
in process.
Proceso,
we have the fifth round of talks on that matter already. And I should say that the process, well, it's quite technical by its nature. And Mexico
al tiempo que llevamos a cabo este proceso de negociación, México está expandiendo
sus
horizontes comerciales. Estamos diversificando el acceso a otros mercados. Estamos en una etapa ya muy
avanzada,
por ejemplo, de la
modernización
de nuestro acuerdo con la Unión Europea. Estamos negociando nuevos acuerdos de acceso comercial con Brasil. También con Argentina, hemos iniciado a través de la Alianza del Pacífico un proceso de negociación.
Moreover, so within the framework of the
Nueva Zelanda,
NAFTA, we've started talks with New Zealand, Australia, and Singapore. And certainly we participate
in Vietnam la semana pasada.
The
es un que está
TPP 11, as,
así que
as we call it, we just had a session. So the process is up and running, you see. Our agenda is very, very contentful,
y es en este contexto
very detailed.
Que
we want to build up relations, trade relations with our countries. That's what we want to do.
Rusia
and
y
that is why we never,
comercial.
Will never refuse to cooperate with Russia.
Es un mercado de oportunidad.
mutually beneficial basis, because we would like to ensure access to our market and we would like to get access to other markets, not only about the processing, but also manufacturing goods
and some other trade sectors
where we have very good competitive grounds. So you see, these processes are running in parallel regardless of other talks.
What we do is
we reinforce our trade ties with Russia and with Russian companies as well.
Добрый день, агентство РИА Новости. Накануне глава Ропнекости заявил, что сейчас необходимо сосредоточиться на политическом регулировании
стабилизации.
И далее сказал цитату, что 22 ноября в Сочи пройдет трехсторонняя встреча лидеров России, Турции и Ирана. А в конце этой недели главы МИД проведут встречу в Анталии для подготовки саммита в Сочи. Можете ли вы, пожалуйста, подтвердить это сообщение? Есть ли точные даты переговоров и какова будет их повестка? Если позволите, второй вопрос по поводу разворачивающихся сейчас дискуссий о продлении мандата совместного механизма расследований ОЗХО ООН после того, как вчера в Совете Безопасности не была принята резолюция о продлении этого мандата.
Первый вопрос уже...
So was for the first question, but already the Kremlin's press service announced that there will be a trilateral meeting between Russia, Iran, and Turkey in Sochi. That meeting will be devoted to the evaluation of the situation,
инициировали и активно продвигают Астанинский процесс,
который позволил Astana process success because we've created the de-escalation zones, we succeeded in decreasing violence, we started the first steps to establish the conciliation process in Syria, and this is the platform which made it possible for the Syrian government and the armed opposition to sit at the same table for talks, for negotiations. As we move closer to the final victory against ISIS and other terrorists in Syria, we see new opportunities emerge to step up the political talks in compliance with the parameters set forth in the 2254 UN Security Council resolution. These talks they are being conducted under the auspices of the United Nations. According to the information, over the last months we've not been seen any special activity in the work of our UN colleagues. We agreed with our partners, Turkey and Iran, to stimulate the work towards the start of direct talks between the governmental forces and the all range of opposition to, so that they could talk on the on the kind of Syria they will be living in afterwards. As you could read in the statement of Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin, we are laying the first bricks in the talks about the constitution and elections in Syria. These matters should be well settled according to the resolution, basing upon the broad consent from the opposition groups, from the government, we all should agree on that. As for the ministerial meeting, so-called Troika meeting, Iran, Syria and Russia, well, that meeting is meant to prepare for the summit. The three presidents should prepare for the summit, and that meeting will be taking place closer to the end of that very week. Thank you. There was one more question about Jim and OPCW. Well, as for the troubles, all the things which happened during the night, well, Moscow time, we already laid out in every detail our attitude towards all those plays and flirting around the chemical incidents in Syria, and we already presented our views on the attempts to make Syrian government responsible for everything. And this way they try to undermine the fact that Syria has already given all its chemical arsenals to the OPCW, so that all arsenals, all chemical weapons of Syria have been eliminated by OPCW, and in particular, the United States, they moved this ship especially for that very purpose of eliminating the chemical weapons. By the way, the OPCW documented that there was no evidence to state that Syria failed to meet its obligations. There were no statements about Syria violating its obligation, but we've been seeing speculations, and lately we've been seeing the tragic case, and I mean the Хашихун incident, 4th of April, where from where we received the first information about the use of chemical weapons, sarin was used, the OPCW must have acted according to its convention to send its experts to the site of the incident. It wasn't done, even though we requested them repeatedly to go to the site and to the Shayrat airport, from where the airplane which dropped the bomb allegedly was taking off, as the U.S. said, but no one sent the experts, neither the OPCW nor Jim. And Jim was the very subject of the talks in the Security Council. We've circulated the information with every fact coming from well-known Western experts who devoted their lives to the matters relating to chemical weapons and the elimination of weapons of mass destruction. And these facts, these reports have been showing that the Jim's report is unfounded, is unprofessional. In The Hague, in New York, we've initiated a number of consultations during which we made every possible effort to reach out to the leadership of the OPCW and to the leadership of that very joint mechanism for the investigation in Syria.
Our
answers, which require very professional answers, so all the questions were left unanswered. Those people at the top of those organizations, they have wonderful experience and competence, but it's clear that they are under tremendous pressure and they're being manipulated by some. That's why our questions remained unanswered. So when we presented the violations of the Convention for the non-proliferation of chemical weapons in this or other incidents, we've also introduced, initiated our own resolution together with China, which was supported by a number of other Security Council members, permanent and non-permanent ones, so that to present the ways to, well, to correct the wrongs in the work of Jim, because we've been seeing quite dirty-handed actions perpetrated by Jim. And the United States, they refused to accept the resolution, saying that all that's been done by the mechanism is a golden standard. And there is nothing but extending the mandate. There should be no reproachment, no complaints. But that would mean only one thing, so that we've all been following the leash of those who imposed their influence on that, over that mechanism. And that influence, it circumvents the every norm of the work of international organizations. They want to remain and control in the driver's seat of that instrument in order to, well, achieve their own political parochial goals. We vetoed that resolution and we presented our own resolution. The resolution which was coordinated with us, it was initiated by Bolivia, project, the draft project had all the necessary changes to the mechanism to make it truly, genuinely transparent and fair. The very fact the United States and their allies vetoed that project shows only one thing, that they don't want to see that mechanism being transparent, understandable, and efficient. And Ms. Haley, permanent representative of the United States to the United Nations, said that all her efforts to reach out our special envoy, Mr. Benza, in the last day to, well, discuss some measures to make it harmonized. That's a direct, a blatant lie. We've read report from UN mission. We've seen no attempts to refuse to talk. We've met with the US side. They tried to introduce some cosmetic changes.
Это было не так. Ни одной проблемы, которую мы вскрыли по существу, они решать не хотели. Но то,
что госпожа Хейли достаточно
нервно заявила о том,
будто бы российская миссия отвергала when saying that Russia has been refusing for days your suggestion to meet and talk about these resolutions, these draft resolutions, that's just a lie. And perhaps that's something new in the world of international relations, a new phenomenon. Not only fake news, but also fake diplomacy is here. And that is certainly lamentable. Colleagues, if you don't have any questions, then we are completing our press conference. Thank you.
On Thursday, the FCC held a press conference after a meeting that they held with four of the five commissioners speaking to reporters about some of the agenda items they had discussed earlier, including robocall blocking regulations, spectrum allocation, media ownership rules, and a new broadcast standard for television. We'll bring you as much of that as we can fit into the end of this program.
Today, we're going to be at a point where constantly the amount of money we have coming in will only pay for the entitlement programs. That's all. Nothing else. Won't pay for the military, won't pay for education, won't pay for highways, won't pay for anything else. That is our future, is that we only have enough money coming in to pay for the entitlement programs.
Let me give you 2 points. I don't think, and I've had this debate with folks who claim to be super progressive, I think there's nothing progressive about refusing to acknowledge the math around some of the entitlement programs. I think Social Security and Medicare are great programs. But, you know, when I was your age, there were 15 people working for every one person on retirement. Today, there are 3 people working for every one person on retirement. Don't blame us. Blame the doctors. Y'all are living longer. But there's, you know, that progressive, that notion, and Bob has said this, if entitlement squeezes out everything else, I'll tell you, America's business plan right now, and this was even, frankly, with the end of Obama, and it's gotten worse with Trump, is for every dollar you send Uncle Sam, we're spending about 7 cents on education, infrastructure, and R&D. Now, as a business guy, I'd never invest in a business that spent less than 10% of its revenues on its workforce, plant, and equipment and staying ahead of the competition. That is a bad business plan. And the only way you're going to relieve that, unless you raise taxes beyond what people would ever expect, is fiscally responsibility and also realize government still needs to make those investments.
Sir, I think you get the last question, so please make it good.
So this is a campaign finance related question. This building is dedicated in some ways to the Freedom of Information Act, and you guys in Congress frequently praise transparency in government. If you had to publish your daily schedules showing the amount of hours spent fundraising at dinners or in these call log centers, would that embarrassment be enough to cause you to change the way campaigns are financed and look more closely at citizen or publicly funded campaigns? If you had to reveal your schedule, your call logs, your visitor logs, the way that all the secretaries of the departments have to do under FOIA, the way the president has to do under the Presidential Records Act, but you guys made yourselves exempt.
Yeah, I'm lucky I don't do as much of it as many of the colleagues, because I've got, again, and there shouldn't be a prerequisite that you've got to come to this job having financial security. That I think is also opposite. So, yeah, I think it would make a difference.
So I think that maybe on the House side it's a bigger issue than it is on ours. Yeah. Just for what it's worth, it would not embarrass me, especially right now. I'm not angry.
Yeah. Well, that would be weird.
But honestly, I don't think between Mark and I, just and
we're lucky.
We're in a little bit different position. But no, I'd be glad to let everybody know how much time I spent raising money compared to all the scraying hours I spend doing other things and going to the Middle East and all those kind of things. So it would not embarrass me in any way. But I get your point.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that is about a conclusion of our program. First, I want to thank the senators so much. They're so busy. Thank you. It was a fantastic conversation. You can see the people who lined up to talk. It was great interest. And I thank our audience very much, and live and here, especially a special nod to our New York Times subscribers. Thank you for your support of our journalism and for being here. And check nytimes.com for other, more live events here in Washington next year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
C-SPAN, where history unfolds daily. In 1979, C-SPAN was created as a public service by America's cable television companies and is brought to you today by your cable or satellite provider.
This weekend, C-SPAN's Cities Tour takes you to Burlington, Vermont, and with the help of our Comcast cable partners, we'll explore the literary scene and history of Burlington, which sits on the shores of Lake Champlain. Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on Book TV, author Bill Mayers and cartoonist Jeff Danziger discuss their book, The Full Vermontee, Vermont in the Age of Trump.
Bill wanted to put out a book because Vermont is, I think voted for Hillary Clinton in greater numbers than any other state. And, you know, remember, it's a small state, so it doesn't amount to that much, but the numbers were impressive. So he wanted to put together a book where people in the state answered the question, what do we do now with Trump in charge? Trump is obviously, in my view, against most of the values and characteristics that Vermonters have.
On Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern on American History TV, hear about Revolutionary War hero and Vermont founding father, Ethan Allen.
He was the first colonel commandant of the original Green Mountain Boys. And the Green Mountain Boys were at one time the largest paramilitary force in North America. If not for the actions of Ethan Allen and the other Green Mountain Boys, Vermont may very well have looked different than it does today.
Then a visit to the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum.
America's first Great Lake when it comes to historic significance. Lake Champlain is a 120-mile-long water superhighway that cuts between the Green Mountains of Vermont and the Adirondacks of New York.
Watch C-SPAN Cities Tour of Burlington, Vermont, Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on C-SPAN 2's Book TV, and Sunday at 2 p.m. on American History TV on C-SPAN 3, working with our cable affiliates as we explore America.
Next, the Federal Communications Commission meets to consider a proposed rule change to broadcast ownership rules that would impact a pending merger between the Sinclair Broadcast Group and the Tribune Corporation. The full meeting was just over 4 hours. We'll show you about 90 minutes of it.
We'll now proceed to a vote. Commissioner Clyburn.
I dissent.
Commissioner O'Reilly.
Aye.
Commissioner Carr.
Aye.
Commissioner Rosenworcel?
Dissent.
The chair votes aye. The item is adopted with editorial privileges granted as requested. Thanks to the staff for the presentation. Madam Secretary, could you please take us to item number 6 on today's agenda?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, the 6th item on your agenda will be presented by the Media Bureau and is entitled 2014 Quadrennial Regulatory Review, Review of the Commission's Broadcast Ownership Rules and Other Rules Adopted pursuant to Section 202 of the Telecommunications Act of 96. And Michelle Carey, Chief of the Bureau, will give the introduction.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. Ms. Carey, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. The Media Bureau is pleased to present to you an order on reconsideration and notice of proposed rulemaking that modernizes the Commission's broadcast ownership rules to reflect the realities of the modern marketplace, and seeks comment on how to structure and implement an incubator program to facilitate new entry in the broadcast industry. Joining me at the table are Brendan Holland, Benjamin Arden, and Chad Goh of the Media Bureau. Chad will present the item.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, we present to you this an order in NPRM, which repeals and modifies outdated broadcast ownership restrictions, initiates an incubator program to help facilitate entry of new and diverse voices into the broadcast industry, and seeks comment on how to structure this program. The Commission is required by statute to review its broadcast ownership rules every 4 years to determine whether they remain necessary in the public interest as the result of competition, and to repeal or modify any regulation the Commission determines to be no longer in the public interest. In August of last year, the Commission adopted a second report and order that completed the 2010 and 2014 reviews of the Commission's broadcast ownership rules. Several parties sought reconsideration of various aspects of the second report and order. Today's order grants in part three petitions for reconsideration, finding that many of the ownership restrictions adopted or retained in the second report and order are not supported by the record and must be repealed or modified. Specifically, today's order repeals the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule, finding that the rule is no longer necessary to promote viewpoint diversity given the multitude of voices in the modern media marketplace, and that the rule unnecessarily prevents combinations that would enable both broadcasters and local newspapers to better serve consumers in their local communities. The order also finds that the radio television cross-ownership rule is no longer necessary to promote viewpoint diversity in the modern media marketplace and must be eliminated. With respect to the local television rule, the order eliminates the requirement that at least 8 independently owned television stations must remain in a market after ownership of 2 stations is combined in the market. The order finds that this 8 voices test was unsupported by the record or any reasoned basis. The order also incorporates a case-by-case review option in the prohibition against common ownership of 2 top 4 rated stations in a market. This tailored approach to the application of the top 4 prohibition will better reflect the competitive conditions in local markets. Today's order also repeals the attribution rule for television joint sales agreements, or JSAs, which are agreements that allow non-commonly owned stations to jointly sell their advertising time. The order finds that the Commission's decision to attribute these agreements was unsupported by the record, and that television JSAs are beneficial agreements that serve the public interest by allowing broadcasters, television broadcasters, to better serve their local communities. For the local radio ownership rule, the order adopts a presumptive waivers approach for transactions involving existed embedded Nielsen audio markets, which are smaller markets that are also part of a larger Nielsen audio market. In addition, today's order on reconsideration retains the disclosure requirement for shared service agreements, or SSAs, involving commercial television stations. The order finds the underlying decision defining these agreements and requiring their disclosure in online public inspection files was supported by the record. Finally, today's order finds that the Commission will adopt an incubator program to help promote new entry and ownership diversity in the broadcast industry. An incubator program can help provide certain benefits to an entity that helps facilitate station ownership for a certain class of entities through the provision of technical expertise and or financial assistance. In today's notice, the Commission seeks comment on how to structure and implement such a program, including how to define entities eligible to participate, incubation activities, incentives for encouraging incubation, the review process for incubation proposals, compliance, and potential costs and benefits of such a program. The Media Bureau recommends that the Commission adopt this order on reconsideration and notice and proposed rulemaking and requests editorial privileges to make any necessary technical or conforming edits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Guo. Now to comments from the bench, beginning with Commissioner Clyburn.
Thank you. Luckily, I didn't take a bit with Commissioner Carr. I think he predicted 1 o'clock. I predicted 1:15. We're both wrong. So I might have to take a 7-inning stretch.
3:15?
I'm sorry? You said 3:15? No, I said 1:15.
We can get the flask if you want to make it happy hour.
Don't tempt me. I don't drink, but boy, I'm getting closer. resetting the tone here. The problems with this order on reconsideration are so glaring, both on process and substance, it is truly hard to decide just where to begin.